1472. In reading Sladek's parody of me, note: John Sladek's short story, Solar Shoe Salesman, a Dick parody, first published in The Magazine of Fantasy and Science Fiction, March 1973. End note. I get the impression that to me the universe is not to be taken seriously, probably because I am afraid of it, but nevertheless curious about it, fascinated by it, dangerous as I see it to be. But that somehow a handle exists by which to unravel it and make it yield up what it really is, if anything. It may not be anything at all, but I'm trying for handle after handle, poking around, trying everything reversed and backward, like it's a toy. Layer after layer reveals paradox after paradox, which in themselves I find fascinating. Also, I do seem attracted to trash, as if the clue, the clue, lies there. I'm always ferreting out elliptical points, odd angles. What I write doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There is fun and religion and psychotic horror strewn about like a bunch of hats. Also, there is a social or sociological drift. Rather than toward the hard sciences, the overall impression is childish but interesting. This is not a sophisticated person writing. Everything is equally real, like junk jewels in the alley. A fertile creative mind seeing constantly shifting sets, the serious made funny, the funny sad. The horrific exactly that, utterly horrific, as if it is the touchstone of what is real. Horror is real because it can injure. It all is a brave whistling in the dark tunnel, like Stephanie, funny when frightened. Scare her, and she will tell you a joke. The situation oddly viewed. No wonder I loved her so. She experienced the affinity between not sorrow and humor, but fear and humor. I certainly see the randomness in my work. And I also see how this fast shuffle of possibility after possibility might eventually, given enough time, juxtapose and disclose something important automatically overlooked in more orderly thinking. Pataphysique. No wonder my stuff is popular in France. The surrealist, the absurd. Also, it is palpably autobiographical. The little business firms and the fatherly owner or world leader. Note: between 1947 and 1951, Dick worked for Herb Hollis at University Radio and later at Art Music in Berkeley, jobs that helped him make the difficult transition from awkward teenager to self-sufficient adult. A straight-laced father figure, Hollis served as a kind of mentor for Dick, while his co-workers served as models for Dick's future characters. Whether with the futuristic ad agency in The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch, the family-run Android business in We Can Build You, or the anti-telepathy prudence organizations in Ubik, Dick's fiction constantly recasts his formative years working for Hollis, often focusing on the plight of a small business operation struggling against a more powerful but less upstanding competition. In 1977, Dick told interviewer Uwe Anton that the ultimate surrealism is to take somebody that you knew, whose life ambition was to sell the largest television set that the store carried, and put him in a future utopia or dystopia and pit him against this dystopia. Dick's thematic concern for the little guy, as opposed to the galactic royalty featured in space opera, was one of the defining features of his work. DG. End note. Since nothing, absolutely nothing, is excluded, as not worth being included, I proffer a vast mixed bag. Out of it, I shake coin-operated doors and God. It's a fucking circus. I'm like a sharp-eyed crow spying anything that twinkles and grabbing it up to add to my heap. anyone with my attitude might just stumble onto by sheer chance and luck. In his actual life, which is to say, the life of his mind, the authentic camouflaged God, the Deus absconditus, by trying odd combinations of things and places, like a high-speed computer processing everything, he might outdazzle even a wary God, might catch him by surprise by poking somewhere unexpectedly. If it is true that the real answers and authentic absolute versus the merely seeming are where we would least expect them, this try-it-all technique might one day succeed by believing what it would never occur to anyone else to believe, really believe. Might take at face value as true the most worn out, most worked over, and long ago discarded obvious staring us in the face all the time as the crux of the mystery. To be able to see the mystery in the obvious, the best camouflaged, ultra-terrestrial life form might one day guess wrong and be flushed briefly out of its concealment, which had always worked before. For one thing, a totally naive person like this, who would believe anything, might believe in what is really there, but conceptually, automatically rejected by more experienced people. The child has faith in what the adult knows can't be, and so could never see, obvious though it might be, i.e., before everyone's eyes, hidden in plain sight. This kind of fascinated, credulous, inventive person might be granted the greatest gift of all, to see the toy maker who has generated and is with or within all his toys. That the Godhead is a toy maker at all, who could seriously believe this? The key here is pattern and pattern recognition. Such a person is able to pattern, gestalt, and repattern rapidly, evidently experiencing a mercurial world. Out of the very many patterns he might possibly one time hit on correctly perceived and interpreted authentic traces of objects and processes, mimicking ultra-TI by a rapid flux of linking and relinking percepts and data bits, his gestalting could keep pace with the high-velocity, shape-changing UTI. And this description of it sounds like a Joker God, Dionysus, and the humble servant god, Hephaestus, the twisted, gnarled old grapevine root. He would literally see it and its secret life. Too dumb to know you don't look for God in the trash of the gutter instead of heaven. 1484. There is, then, in this system, a kind of Tao of Taoism, in that it borrows both Eastern and Western cosmogonical and cosmological and religious concepts to account for that which, for example, Christianity alone seems incapable of reasonably explaining. Will Durant, in Our Oriental Heritage, declares that explaining undeserved suffering is the cardinal task of religion. If this be so, Orthodox Christianity is a failure, and Taoism, taken alone, is an elitist worldview which accepts reality as it is because it is as it is, in contradistinction, e.g., with Zoroastrianism. What is most firmly rejected in the Hindu reasoning that somehow suffering is only an illusion. My system states, the Godhead is in difficulty. Evil is not the manifestation of an evil deity, nor a sign of God's vengeance, etc., but an analog in the lower or microcosm of the difficulty in the macrocosm or pleroma. The yin aspect has exceeded its proper limits, perhaps as an oscillation of a great supratemporal cycle, and rectification is already in progress. May 1978. Folder 15. 15.8. The true deity has reasserted itself in the overthrowing of the American government. Perhaps one of the reasons for its victory is that the evil powers did not understand what they were up against, sincerely believing that they had destroyed, not just banished, the light especially, since the light re-entered by trash routes. They did not recognize it even when confronted by it. That was its intention. Since the evil one posed as the solemn, the dignified, the noble, the true God took on all the despised and rejected and looked down on forms. The messages in Ubik and the last one, where its cheap and vulgar mask is thrown off to disclose its true nature. Wind blowing through the dry weeds, tracing a path, the abyss, the sacred void, silent and invisible, like electricity. The answer is blowing in the wind. 15.9. What an extraordinary theological thought. Answer to the question, if God exists, why can't we see him, and why does he permit evil? Fact is, evil did him in, temporarily, and banished him. 15.12. The PTG world is what the BIP yields to when it is destroyed. It is the goal of the activity of Zebra, and in which we are all supposed, are needed to play vital parts. Then, 1. Originally, there was a functioning information exchange, transfer, projection, and reception, and acting on response stage. 2. Then the fall, when bogus information entered and resembling true information was trustingly received and stored and acted on by us. A sort of cuckoo's egg situation. Dokos good enough to fool us. Actual information was driven out, occluded. The bogus information occluded us somehow. Then, 3, the true logos, living information, slips back in here unnoticed by the source of the false interpolated information, in camouflage form. First and second advents. So originally, the bogus info mimicked the actual successfully enough to fool us. And now we have a situation in which the actual has returned in a form mimicking the bogus. My delight. Fake fakes. But to reach one of us, the actual information, logos, has to breach a veritable wall of spurious flak. It must break the hold which the false information as world has on us. We are enslaved to and by the false information, world, counterfeit continuum. And it is a blind, deterministic prison of cause and effect which uses us up, wears us out for its purposes, and then throws us away. Note: Dick's higher and lower realms mirror the important distinction he draws in his fiction between man and machine. While machines are predictable, man is not. Moreover, the machine is cold and unfeeling, cut off from the plight of those around it. Similarly, in the exegesis, the lower realm is incapable of empathy. Like an android programmed to react in a predetermined way, the spurious world is a deterministic maze of unthinking causation that cannot by its nature care about anyone stumbling blindly through its passages. Like the heroes in Dick's fiction, the true reality of the higher realm is based on its ability to love. D.G. End note. To gain the salvific help of Zebra, we must first back against the bogus world and partially break its hold. We must bipolarize against it, knowing it can and will defeat us. That means that for all intents and purposes, the bogus data, world, form a moral and intellectual puzzle, which each of us must to a certain extent solve before we can be saved. Here is where pistis comes in, but not a blind pistis, except in this sense. We must deny the reality, the intellectual balking presented to our senses, or balk on moral grounds, indict the world as evil, and so align ourselves with God, the ham sandwich model. One of the things I like about this theory is that it implies great salvific worth to my writing about counterfeit worlds, especially when I equate their production with evil, three stigmata, etc. Actually, we are not enslaved by a false world, because there is no world there. We are enslaved by a real and evil entity, which projects data contoured to resemble a world. It is a thing, the BIP. It fires controlling stimuli, signals, at us, which we are compelled to respond to in fixed ways. It was this that Zebra broke as deterministic hold over me in 374, e.g., the Bradbury TV program, etc. If we could see this structure as it really is, we would see ourselves in the midst of disinhibiting stimuli fired at us so as to link up with internal synchronized up-to-then-inhibited circuits. We would see no world, but we would see a vast structure, virtually a big black iron building, totally enclosing us, just firing signals again and again at us. We must serve some purpose to it. But who cares what that is? It is sufficient to know that it isn't to our advantage, and we need rescue. Maybe we're sources of psychic over psychological energy to it. We help power it. But more likely, it is a gestalt, bogus, an imitation of the legitimate universe organism. 15.14. Our very mechanisms have been taken advantage of. It was not intended that we discriminate false info from true. There was not supposed to be any false info in the first place. Strange that I, who believe everything I'm told, doubt the entire empirical world and stigmatize it as a product, in the form of spurious data, of evil. It is not an evil world. There is no real world there at all. But there is something there, though, a vast bank of lights and sounds and colors flashing at us from all sides, to which we must react. We are enclosed by it. It is what the ancients called Ananki, or fate. And it was the power of this that the Savior broke. 15.25. It is a single mind occupying a number of people critically placed. It replicates hologrammatic micrototalities of itself in each occupied stratum. Thus, any part of it is equal to the whole in terms of knowledge content. For it, information is energy. Its very psychic life energy, until it implants the special signal in the fossil, e.g., a book published at the exact right time. It is cut off from its makers, senders, in the future. Upon this 274 signal, contact with it is reestablished, since now they know exactly when and where it is. So all that info I got wasn't meant for me, but for it. It was living symbiotically in me, had been for some while, but at a subcarrier level, hidden and latent as form, but growing and spreading, branching like a grapevine into person after person, objects, mimicking them by transubstantiation. 15.27. Supertemporally speaking, there is one adversary thing and one attack on it, threaded through linear time, like a nail driven through an onion. By spreading itself exploded along the linear time axis, the BIP hopes to lose itself in variegated polyforms. Linear time is like an escape route for it, a medium within which and by which it seeks to baffle its adversaries. But since they are supertemporal and transtemporal, they are aware of its proliferations, which are illusory as pluralities anyhow. There is really only one of it. So Zebra is inserted at crucial times and then acts as a receiver transducer of what I guess could be called the Omega people and Omega mind. I guess Zebra's roots in me are permanent, which is fine with me. I can't think of anything I'd rather have than this permanent bonding to it. I know perfectly well that it is the cosmic Christ we are talking about, something of ineffable beauty. 15.28. John 1.1. Living information, the Logos, sent back in time at or before creation, coded to impose certain imprintings on matter, to imprint DNA-coded drives. If no one put the subcarrier information there, then it put itself there, which means it's alive. If this info is an entity in itself, which can modulate itself, then to know this information is to be possessed by it. You are automatically in a symbiotic state with it. This is a new category of existence. It's like the ring in The Hobbit. It goes where it wants to go. It can direct its own future, as if we're radio waves. It modulates us. We're the carrier signal. It's as if RF waves become aware that info messages are using it, passing through it, like Elton John songs. 1529. Can anti-info have a life of its own? The problem of spurious information, the lie. Look at the level it's raised to. It's pure death. But where does it originate? Does it have its own radio station? Yes, that's the first thing. I picked up. It yammers at us all the time. We are the battlefield. Info is not a description of reality. It is a fiat. Let there be. It determines form. Our info is partial, occluded, because it is being jammed. Anti-information, the lie, die messages. Eventually, you sicken and die of this. Your ancestors ate manna in the wilderness, and they are all dead. And I am the bread of eternal life. When we are used as carriers, we don't know it. Were we brought into existence for this? What is the genesis of all this? Our systems can't detect spurious information, distinguish it. And this implies that there was a time when there was no spurious information. You can't counterfeit a dollar until real dollars exist. We're contaminated by false info because we have no distinguishing, rejecting ability. Bob Wilson says, there are people who possess secret information. Note, Robert Anton Wilson, 1932 to 2007, was a countercultural author, philosopher, and friend of Dick's. His book, The Cosmic Trigger, features interesting parallels with 2374. End note. Wrong. There are people who are possessed by secret information. True info is not destroyed. It's just covered up. So all we need to know is here, intact.